Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Sam Pets Radio, Australia's coolest podcast network.
Hey everybody, and welcome to another episode of Serious Issues, a weekly comic book podcast hosted by me, Andrew Levins, and joining me today from across the, I was going to say seas, but I think there's just dirt between us, from Melbourne, Australia, I have the Joels, Zamet and Dusha.
Hello.
Hello.
Isn't there like a mountain range?
No, there's the Murray River. God damn it, guys. Know your fucking geography. I'm dog shit at geography.
Where's the Grampians?
I don't know. See, I'm terrible at geography. I just know that there what is definitely say? The Murray River.
I wouldn't say like from across the seas. Would I say from across the river?
Yeah, you could say across the river, across state lines.
Also, isn't the Murray River between Victoria and South Australia, not Victoria and New South Wales?
No. Murray River is between Victoria and New South Wales. I mean,
that's a pretty big river.
Pretty sure.
Anyway,
I just
thankfully
want to tap out now before I say anything even more stupid.
Thankfully, this is not a podcast about Australian geography. This is a podcast that's all about comic books. And today we are very excited to hear that Zamet is furthering his knowledge of Dune.
Damn right.
Via comic books. And Dusha is furthering his knowledge of Junji Ito manga.
That's it.
Horror manga.
That's it. The more fucked, the better.
And one of those things is my fault. but to kick the show off, we're going to talk about... Well, look, I saw The Suicide Squad over the weekend. Have you guys seen it as well?
Yeah, we both saw it. We actually managed to sneak into an actual cinema just before the lockdown was announced in Victoria. So we were...
Crazy.
Some of the very lucky few, because the lockdown was announced...
Yeah, you didn't have to break the law.
No.
I had to break the law. And do you know that if they catch you, you actually have to join Task Force X?
Oh, no. Yeah, Amanda Waller is so mean. You're in trouble.
Amanda Waller. Yeah, it's a Task Force X is 5,000 people with no combat skills that illegally downloaded a movie. That's the sequel.
Okay, yeah. Now we did a based reaction on our other podcast, Baseless Speculation, and in mid episode, you can hear three boys react to the fact that we're going back into lockdown.
Yeah,
so, I love those.
Yeah, it was nice. It was a nice little gift for us. Yeah. You know?
How many lockdowns is this now?
Six,
I think. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's great.
This is the fourth one this year. Just got extended today, in fact. Keeping the tradition alive.
What was the best thing you did in the week that you weren't in lockdown?
Weren't
was
in
it
lockdown.
Seaside Squad?
I got drunk 3 times in a week.
That's nice. Mm. I think me and my wife booked several little weekends away. So the hope.
I hope you didn't pay anything in advance.
Oh, we did. Oh, it was nice. Well, we've got 2 years to use it, so
okay.
It was good. That's so I'm guessing that week of hope, that was almost kind of like that free adrenaline of being like, it's going to be so nice to get away for the first time in almost like a year and a half now, I think. But yeah, it was that week of hope was real nice. It was something to like cling on to. The crash down, I wouldn't recommend, but that initial hope, it's exciting.
I also spent 2.5 hours on the phone to Centrelink, the Australian Social Security service, to try and get lost income payment, and I was successful, so that was one of the best things I did in the week off.
Yeah, I had a similar experience. How long is the loop of music for Centrelink?
Not long enough.
Because I'm pretty sure the Service New South Wales hold music, I reckon the loop is 8 seconds.
Yeah.
Which is just so demented. Why would they do that to people? Knowing that the wait is going to be 2 hours.
Just play the radio or something.
Yeah. I watched the entirety of the 2018 film Tag whilst on hold to Centrelink.
That's so good. Jeremy Renner's magnum opus, right?
Yeah, that's it. He allegedly broke his arms in production and they had to CGI his arms on, but I don't know if that's true. Watching it, it didn't feel true.
Was he very charismatic in that film?
Oh, no. But John Hamm's there, and he's charismatic.
Well, while no one, as far as I know, while filming the movie, lost their arms in the Suicide Squad, many characters lost them in the movie. And watching the movie, like I had fun with it.
Yeah.
More than anything, it made me realize, I kind of missed the world of DC. So I took it upon myself to read a DC comic this week, and I saw that last week something pretty interesting looking came out, and that is Batman 89.
Oh, hell yeah.
I didn't read the 89th issue of Batman, gents. That's not what I did this week. I don't know if you are aware of this, but last year they announced that they're going to be making two series extending famous DC movies from the past through comic books. And so we got a sequel to Richard Donner's Superman called Superman 78. And last week we got Batman 89, which continues the work of Tim Burton's Batmanverse.
DC know what they're doing when it comes to like media? Are they just like, we keep shit in the bed with our old, like, current films? So let's just go back to the well where things were good.
I like to think that there's like one person at DC and Warner Brothers who knows what they're doing, and 4,000 people that don't. Well, and every month they're like, hey, your idea goes through now, and this is definitely one of those.
Well, Batman 89 in a rare move actually makes a lot of sense, because there was the Batman 66 comic book series like a couple of years ago, I think, that people liked, unless I imagined that. And also,
no, that was good.
Batman, like Michael Keaton's Batman's popping up in the Flash movie, so it's a really good time to remind everyone of Batman 89.
So Batman 89 is written by the original Batman screenwriter.
Holy shit.
Do you know what his name is? It's so good. It's Sam Hamm.
Fuck. That's a great name.
S-A-M-H-A-M-M.
Sam Hamm.
Sam Hamm.
Sam Hamm. He has written a very strange amount of movies. He did Batman and Batman Returns.
Yep.
He just did the story for Batman Returns. Before Batman, he did a movie called Never Cry Wolf. In 1994, he did a movie called... Oh, no, a television series on the Fox Network that aired for 1 year called Mantis, but it was M-A-N, like M.A.A.N.T.I.S.
So I think I remember Mantis.
That sounds like a spy series.
He wrote the script and was the executive producer of Monkey Bone.
Holy shit!
Yeah.
I love that film!
Are you familiar with this one?
Yeah.
Yeah. The Henry Selick directed movie with Brendan Fraser. And then in 2005, he did Masters of Horror, an anthology series for Showtime. He was a writer on that. This is the first... Oh, I think, yeah, he also wrote unused drafts for Planet of the Apes and Watchmen adaptations.
Holy shit.
But, yeah, he has got a background in writing comic books. But this is his first comic book in a long time, Batman 89, and he is paired up with the artist Joe Quinones, who most recently for DC has done Dial H for Hero. He did the America Chavez run for Marvel a couple years ago. He's a great... He did the Howard the Duck run with Chip Zdarsky a few years ago, if anyone's read that very funny comic run. But he's a great artist. He's one of those artists that can... You know, I feel like it's a sketchy slope,
yeah,
slippery slope even, when you try and draw someone's likeness, like an actor's likeness, in a comic book over and over. Mm. And I think he does a really great job of doing that. You have colors by Leonardo Ito and Clayton Cowles on letters, and Batman 89 is a limited series that continues plot lines from Batman and Batman Returns, the original Tim Burton movies. There was a third movie planned, but they ditched it and instead made Batman Forever instead. But it was going to tell the story of Two-Face, and that is what this does. Now, you may not be familiar or may not realize this, but Two-Face, the character, wasn't actually in either of the Batman movies, but Harvey Dent, who is who becomes Two-Face, was.
Billy Dee Williams, right?
Yeah, that's right, Lando. Billy Dee Williams. Yeah, exactly, Lando himself.
Or
plays,
Billy Dee Williams is also in an incredible underseen film role. He stars as alongside Sylvester Stallone in a movie called Nighthawks, which is the most off-the-wall 80s cop action movie I think I've ever seen. And if you like stupid fun movies, I recommend checking it out. The movie opens with Stallone dressed as a lady, like an old lady, to arrest a criminal. And that's like the opening of the film. And then the criminal gets away and he's just standing on a train station being like, "I will fucking kill you! I'll kill you!" as a cop. It's incredible. And Billy Dee Williams is also in it and pretty much screaming the whole time too. It's incredible.
Well, hopefully that's the next comic book adaptation. Yeah. But for now, we have Batman 89. And yeah, this is a Two-Face story, but we're continuing the plot lines. Apparently a bunch of stuff was cut from with Billy Dee Williams' character from the first two movies. But Batman 89 is all about Harvey Dent. He doesn't become Two-Face in this first issue, but I have to imagine it happens at some point. Gotham is overrun by copycat villains. Lots of people that dress up in clown suits. There's even a few people that resemble the mutants from Batman The Dark Knight Returns.
Oh, sick.
There were mutants?
What's that, sorry?
They were mutants?
Well, that's what they're called. Like they call themselves the mutants.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. You know, they wear like the weed glasses. They have mohawks. Mutants.
Okay. Like punks.
Yeah, it's been too long since I've seen Batman 89.
Yeah.
Like, no, they're not in Batman 89. They're in Frank Miller's comic Dark Knight Returns, set in the future.
Oh, yeah. Yep, no, I'm with you. I follow.
They have like very weird like street talk. They're like, "We's a slicer dicer," shit like that. but Gotham is still overrun with crooks, and in this at the beginning of this issue, we have Harvey Dent on a date with Barbara Gordon, daughter of Commissioner Gordon, and it gets rudely interrupted by a robbery. A guy in a clown suit steals Barbara's purse, and Harvey Dent chases after him and flips a coin to see whether or not this guy's going to live or die, but then ends up just shooting the gun into the air to scare him away. And as this happens, Batman stops a big theft of some trucks by a helicopter, but in doing so, makes the helicopter crash into a building. And while he saved $38 million from being stolen from what was inside the jewel trucks or whatever, he caused $20-something million in damage via helicopter to the side of a building.
Yeah,
classic.
So Harvey Dent decides that Gotham is a place for maniacs no longer, and the best way to fix this problem is to get rid of Batman once and for all. So he goes and meets with Bruce Wayne, and says, "Hey, you know, we're both big figures in this city. What do you say we take down Commissioner Gordon and Batman?" And of course, we have a very Michael Keaton-esque figure. in Bruce Wayne, who he has to kind of bluff that he isn't actually Batman, and we get the setup. This is essentially Harvey Dent trying to take down Batman using the legal system, and it kind of explores what a black Harvey Dent, what his upbringing would be like, what his aspirations are, because we've only ever seen white, you know, explorations of his character in depth so far. It's interesting. It's a really gorgeous looking comic. And I think there's a few, the only character sadly that Joe Quinones doesn't get right on a few pages is Michael Keaton, a pretty important character to get right. But he's made his head like real long, real long head.
Because Mark, he's got a very distinct look.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, sometimes he nails it, but there's a few moments where you're like, "Is that? I don't know if that's Michael Keaton." But Billy Dee Williams always looking real good. And I was very excited to see the old guy who plays Alfred in all four of the 80s and 90s Batman movies. His likeness is fantastic.
Hell yeah.
Spot on. He was like my favorite thing about those movies for some reason. The old guy who plays Alfred.
That's such a weird thing.
He really
thing
nailed
to love.
It back then.
I don't know why I loved it. Yeah, it's bizarre. Who played Commissioner Gordon in those early movies?
That is a great question. I feel like Commissioner Gordon wasn't. Although, to be honest, my knowledge of the original four Batman films is weighted more towards the 90s ones than the 80s ones.
We get it. We all love Kiss Me, Kill Me, Thrill Me by U2. We all love Kiss From a Rose by Seal.
Mm. Yeah.
I do love the Bat Dance by Prince.
I have that
of course, favorite of mine.
I don't know how this ended up in my possession because I definitely don't remember buying it, but I have the Bat Dance like 7-inch single for some reason.
Lucky boy. I have the Cass single.
Hell yeah.
Cassette.
Also lucky boy. I have to find it on YouTube and they keep taking it down.
Hang on.
Yeah, so we have a...
Pat Hingle plays Commissioner Gordon.
Yeah, and he's a big old fella.
Yeah.
It was funny seeing quite a burly Commissioner Gordon, because I feel like we're very used to a kind of much weedier, glasses-wearing version of, overtired version of that character. It was a really, really great issue.
Who's?
That's me. I'm sorry. Were you guys getting that too?
That's all right.
Archie is currently playing Minecraft with his friends, and they call each other to talk about Minecraft, and that they use my account.
Very cute.
So just quickly going back to something you said right at the start before we even started talking about the comic, Sam Hamm. Do you know which screenplay treatment or when he was involved in trying to write the screenplay for Watchmen, the film? Because that will absolutely color how this series is going to go.
I probably pre-Zack Snyder, I'd imagine.
Yeah, because there was a treatment for Watchmen in the, I think it was early or mid 90s, that is fucking insane. Like, as in just fucking off the wall. Just pure insanity. It's kind of more like a adaptation in the spirit of Watchmen, I guess, rather than the plot of Watchmen, because there was that period of time where everyone was like, Watchmen's unfilmable. And if Sam Hamm was responsible for writing on that, then Batman 89 may take some fucking crazy turns.
So he wrote the script for Watchmen in 1988 for Terry Gilliam to direct.
That's the fucked one.
Do you remember anything particularly fucked about it?
I think they changed I can't remember heaps about it, but I remember that I think they changed the time period, which is weird because the comic was only a couple of years old. I honestly can't remember the exact details, but I remember reading about the film that they almost made and being like, wow, that would have been something.
So it begins in 1976 with a terrorist situation at the Statue of Liberty led by Captain Metropolis and Adrian Veidt, aka Ozymandias. They set out to foil the plot, but then Dr. Manhattan fails to save the lead terrorist from destroying Lady Liberty, causing a severe backlash on the team's reputation by the media and disgruntled public.
I feel like that, it starts like that, which kind of makes sense if you're trying to, simplify Watchmen. You're like, here's an inciting incident where the public lose trust in the team. But I feel like that at some point in the film, it just takes, a real... Because it's Terry Gilliam as well. I think it becomes, just madness.
Yeah, wow. Very cool. There's a differences from the comic section of the wiki, and it's just enormous.
Yeah.
It's more inspired by as opposed to adaptation.
Featuring characters from... that actually makes the comic.
Terry Gilliam was actually unhappy with Hamm's draft because the first draft was just a bunch of superheroes, and then he ended up restoring the original comics narration and of Rorschach's journal and a few other things to be closer in tone to the comic series.
Okay, so that I guess
they filmed this.
What?
No, just the draft. The draft is never... Okay, I get it. Cool. I was like...
We just uncover that there's like a 1988 Watchmen film that for some reason no one talks about. I'd be like, what the fuck? Guys, I gotta go. I got something to track down.
Well, that's so funny that they got Ham back. They got the Sam Ham back for this comic. And it's pretty good. If anything, it's not crazy enough. It's pretty like reserved.
Yeah.
It's a pretty reserved first issue.
Yeah.
That's for sure. But I enjoyed it. I like the art. I'll definitely keep reading and see where it goes.
Yeah, it's exciting they're doing stuff like that. And look, I'm absolutely in one of the camps that I'm dying for a Raimi Spider-Man 4. And I think that stuff like this is going to result in at least a comic book adaptation of it.
Yeah. Well, speaking of comic book adaptations, Joel Zammit, last week you read... after admitting that you have not read any or watched any Dune, you decided to review... a prequel,
yes,
to Dune, yes. Comic to a very specific one character, and you know, understandably completely lost, and many people wrote in and said, hey, why don't you read the graphic novel version of the regular Dune that makes way more sense, you idiot.
I'm getting that feedback, and you know what? Correct. So yes, I sunk my teeth into the Dune adaptation, the more recent Dune adaptation, which is basically taking the novel. I'll make Frankie Herb's novel and being like, let's make it into a comic book that is good, and it's adapted by his son Brian Herbert and Kevin J. Anderson.
A lot of good names, I think, today. Brian Herbert.
Right. Oh, I know. But I think Brian Herbert and Kevin J. Anderson, I think they write like everything Dune related that isn't like the original Frank's work.
Yeah.
Basically just kept writing his dad's coattails. And again, I don't really know much about the fandom, but I'm fairly certain that most people don't quite like what Brian has done. But again, I don't know. I'm still, I'm looking forward to furthering my Dune knowledge. As I have done today. And yeah, it's illustrated by Raul Allen and Patricia Martin. I'm not quite sure what else they've done, but it's good.
They have done lots of work for Valiant.
Oh.
Valiant Comics. They wrote a really, really great miniseries called Secret Weapons, which if you aren't aware of the Valiant universe, that's a really great starting point. A really cool, like, you know, contained miniseries about a bunch of young teenagers who get superpowers.
Bloods.
And consequently hunted by the government.
Damn government, always ruining everything.
Very similar to another comic book series I'm familiar with.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about.
Bloodsport is also Valiant, isn't he?
Bloodshot,
sorry, not Bloodsport, yes, Bloodshot.
Bloodsport's in the Warner Brothers DC movie The Suicide Squad,
yes, which
out
is...
now on Pirate Bay.
this adaptation, I assume it's good. I don't know, having never read the original Dune. It's still confusing, don't get me wrong. There's still stuff that I'm like, I'm just accepting this. There's a lot of words that I'm just like, sure, I guess that is something that, like, I think one, there's like a prophecy and you're like, you're the Jumgablor, and I'm like, sure, all right, why not? Let's go with that. Then there's like the Bene Gesserit or Benny Gesserit, and they're like a subset of maybe people that can read the future. I don't know, yeah. But I'm all in, and I've never been more excited to be a Dune boy. So yeah, it all starts with the planet Arrakis. That is the place that has the spice melange, and again, the spice must flow. And the Harkonnens were like, right, we control this, but the Emperor, who controls everything, is like, I hate the Atreides, because the Leto Atreides, who is like the Duke Atreides, head of the Atreides family, he's like, right, he is getting quite powerful, and the people like him, so I kind of hate him. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask Harkonnen from Arrakis, give it to old mate Atreides, and then cause a plot where the Harkonnen come in and ruin Atreides' day. And the Leto Atreides has one of the Bene Gesserit people named Jessica, a name I know and understand. and
finally,
yeah, it's good.
A name for Joel.
and she is not his wife. He wishes he was. At the end, she's like, towards the end of this book too, is like, oh, I wish I had married you, but I had to keep myself as a bachelor for political reasons. Anyway, but so she's like. his courtesan or whatever, and she has given him a child called Paul. And initially, the sect of the Bene Gesserits were like, "You should have a daughter," because apparently they can just do that. And she was like, "Nah, I want to give old mate Leto an heir," and so he did that because the Bene Gesserits were like, "If you have a daughter, we can marry it off to a Harkonnen prince, I think, and then that'd be union."
Yeah.
But then she's like, "Nah, just giving you a son instead." So anyway, they get asked from their own planet they were like happy with, and then they go to Dune, and then it's all about what's happening there, and they're kind of like taking over that power, and then there's suddenly a prophecy about Paul. He's apparently going to unite something. Yeah. I don't know yet. Is a prophecy of some kind, yeah, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
And then there's like a lot of machinations, and the people being like the Atreides being like, "Harkonnens, they're not done with us. They're going to do something." And so this is basically a trap. So they try and kill Paul with a hunter-seeker drone thing.
Of course.
And they're trying to sow seeds that it's like, Jessica's going to betray you. She's a, whoa, better watch out. And so then Leto is like, "I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to pretend like that she is going to betray me and can keep that all like, I'm only going to tell Paul this because everything has to be acted right." And so he's like, "Paul, if anything happens to me, tell your mother I love her and that I wish I married her and be good." And he's like, "All right, I will." So anyway, it turns out that the doctor of theirs was like a traitor, and he drugs Leto and then puts a fake tooth in him that when he bites down, it will release a poison gas. And so then when the Harkonnens strike and kidnap Leto, he bites down and tries to kill Baron Harkonnen. Yep. And I'm like, this is like amazing that they're using dentistry as a weapon. Big fan of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then they chuff like Jessica and Paul chuff off into the desert. Also, I saw a sandworm.
Oh, I was going to say, when is Inigo going to get to the sandworms?
I saw the sandworm twice.
Oh my god!
It was so exciting.
Can you describe in great detail the artwork that goes into the sand? Each sandworm that you saw.
Ah. The sandworms look real fucking sick.
Yeah.
They've got big mouths that are open. There's teeth everywhere. There's lightning coming out of their mouths.
That's sick. I would not have guessed lightning.
It's pretty crazy because there's one where he's like, "All right, we've got to go inspect." Because Leto, he's a nice boy. He's a good duke. Everyone loves him. He goes there and he's like, "Right, we're going to have a look down. We're spotting to see if there's any sandworms out." Because apparently when all the harvesters come and do the harvest the spice, they're like, "This will attract sandworms. So we got to be careful." And so they find out. They're like, "Oh, there's a sandworm coming. But don't worry, a carryall's coming over to pick it up." But then the carryall doesn't come. And they're like, "Oh, no, it's going to... damn, those Harkonnen spies ruining everything." And one of the guys who was like... what was he? Some kind of planetologist. And he used to work with the Harkonnens. And he was just like, "Well, I guess, you know, we've got to try and get the spice. Because the spice is... I'm not sure. I think the spice is... people want it. It makes your eyes turn blue and maybe gives you long life and maybe is addictive and maybe it can make you predict the future."
That's sick. A lot of benefits there.
I don't know, but I think. And so he's like, the Duke Leto is like, no, don't care about the harvester or the spice. We've got to save all the people. And the guy's like, "Man, this guy's caring more about us than the spice. Maybe he's a bit all right." And then the sandworm comes and eats the big spice harvester while everyone like flees, but with their life. And it was pretty
That's
cool.
Good.
Could someone hide a sandworm in their tooth?
Maybe, because I know the sandworms can go real big, but maybe they can also go real small. We don't know.
The moment you tell me yes, I'm reading Dune.
So this is a really similar experience to when I first read A Clockwork Orange, where I was just seeing a lot of words that I didn't know what it meant and had no context for, but just like fell into the rhythm of it and was like, "Yeah, okay.
I'm getting it now. Yeah. I'm understanding. It's all this kind of like political machinations all going around. Everyone being like, oh, I gotta do this, I gotta do that." And I'm like, okay, cool. The end of this one is a little bit rushed because the Jessica and Paul, they escape to the desert, and they apparently have like similar to in Preacher, you know, the Word of God.
Yep.
Where they just like do a thing. So I think the Bene Gesserits have that because Paul is also trained for that.
So like mind, and also, mind control voice.
Yeah, and also he might be a mentat, which so in the
oh, we
early...
all know what a mentat is.
Yeah, we're there.
Yeah, okay, cool. Because I think in the early days of the Dune universe...
Oh, we actually don't, I'm joking, I have no idea.
I know, I'm explaining this. In the early days of the Dune universe, I think there was a war fought with AI, and AI was just like outright banned or outlawed, and so any kind of AI uprising, they just squash. And so humanity had to be smart. And so we kind of evolved smart people who basically act like human computer. And I think Paul is a little bit of a mentat or a Bene Gesserit, or he's like the best of both worlds.
The two
and
genu-
a, maybe genders. A Jesus.
Yeah, cool.
It sounds like you're a lot more of a Dune boy now than you were last week.
And yes.
So congratulations and on your progress.
Thank you. That is... And also, it made more sense. The one that the blood of the Sadokar make more sense now. Because I was like, what is going on? And in this uprising where... so in this comic, you don't really get to see much of when the Harkonnens attack the Atreides compound, I guess. I'm not quite sure if that's like a big point in like a big battle sequence in the book or not, but like a lot of people just kind of focuses on them being like, ah, shit's gone down, the shield's down, and now I'm getting drugged, and now I'm all bound up, and now I'm in a helicopter. Whereas in the Blood of the Sadokar was like, well, we're taking it from the like a Sadokar perspective, and he's like, yeah, I'm walking around, and there's that Idaho Jimmy or whatever his name was, Duncan Idaho, there's his name, who's some swordsmith. Anyway, yeah, he's the one that finds Jessica and Paul in the desert, and he's like, I know what to do. And that was the guy that the Sadokar man tried to fire at. There's a scene as well to, like, show respect. They spit on the floor. That was neat.
So, is this bringing...
The water's very sacred.
Okay,
yeah?
I'm glad you're able to follow the plot. That is mm-hmm. really good to know. Do you think, were there any moments where you're like, I wish I was reading this without pictures, or is the art, does it make it a lot easier?
It does make it easier. I had to. So I also to become a Dune boy, as I am becoming. I'm watching or at least listening to as I fall asleep, like YouTube compilations of Dune lore, which is helping.
Helping you sleep or helping you understand Dune?
Helping me understand Dune. Not sure about the sleeping factor, mm-hmm. but at least mm-hmm. I'm understanding. And so I think I want to hunt down the David Lynch
movie
version of Dune, because I have seen that before, but I was young and was also confused. And I'm looking forward to sort of watching that again now in preparation for the new movie to come out in 2024 or whenever.
Yeah, so just wondering with that. So obviously that adaptation was hated by Dune fans.
Yes.
So you
and by the director, yes, yes.
So are you excited to have got into Dune and then immediately watch something that the Dune fan base hate?
Yeah. I'm excited.
Follow-up question, yes. Is it true that fear is the mind killer?
Yes, fear is the mind killer. That is 100% true. That's a bit in the very early on. He puts his hand in a box and then he puts the Bene Gesserit person puts a thing against his neck and he's like, if you move your hand, I'm going to stab you with a poison. And it's, fear is the mind killer, something about obliteration or some crap.
Do you know how much of the book has been covered by this one graphic novel? Like, how many graphic novels do you think they'll need to make before they cover the whole book?
I've heard 3.
Okay.
I don't know where I heard that from, or if I'm making that up. Now that I'm saying it out loud, where did I pull 3 from?
Because the movie,
we'll
the new movie adaptation is half of the book.
Okay, well this ends with the end of this comic, and I'm not quite sure if this is also in the novel, but it just felt very rushed. So Paul has a bit of a dream / spice freak out because he's sucking in all that spice that's in the air. And he's like, oh, I can predict the future now. I know these things that are happening and blah, blah, blah.
So is it good?
Yeah. Backup question, do you like it?
I do. I do. And I don't know if I'm liking it as if I am liking it or if I'm committing to this bit.
A bit of being a Dune boy.
But I'm a June boy now. I've been a June boy. I'm looking forward to finally picking up the actual novel at some point.
I guarantee you by the end of the year, if you continue down this path, you'll be defending the Sun's books.
I don't know what that means, but I hope I will.
The Sun. Yeah.
I thought he meant S-U-N, not S-O-N. Oh,
it's a confusing mistake to make. Yeah. Very easy to do.
Because it wouldn't shock me if there was some kind of like Sons of June, but it's the U instead of the O, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe you become enough a June boy that you can write them yourself.
Oh my God. Maybe this is, yeah, this could be your future. Quit podcasting, write June books.
Nah, my dad didn't write the original Dune. I can't do that.
So we're going to move on now to Douche's comic, but before we do that, let's hear from our sponsor.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Thanks, sponsors. So let's move into the hentai. The manga.
Hey, don't worry. There's a bit of horny in this book.
We've spoken about Uzumaki with you on a previous episode of Serious Issues.
Yep.
Many moons ago. I've reviewed almost every Junji Ito book in some form on this podcast, but not enough attention has been paid to his short stories.
Yeah.
And you read one of those anthologies. What's it called, Douche?
Yeah, so it's called Fragments of Horror, which is a collection of some of his short stories. I got the book in front of me, so I'll let you know which stories are in it. So, Fruton, Wooden Spirit, Tomio Red Turtleneck, Gentle Goodbye, Dissection Chan, Blackbird, and Whispering Woman.
So these are awesome short horror stories.
Yeah, and this... So, like, Junji Ito is obviously really well-known for Uzumaki and Tomie. I've learned how to say it now. And Gyo. More so the first two, I guess. But also very, very, very famous for short stories. And because I usually prefer, like, longer form narration... narrative, not narration. Longer form narrative. So things like an Uzumaki, or like when I read comics, I really like to read, like, I don't know, like trade paperbacks and stuff like that. So I feel like I'm getting like more of the story all at once. I guess it's actually going to make me kind of different from most people. Well, yeah, the Jackson and Zamets of the world who are constantly just reading issues of comics. I usually wait for full stories to drop. But in this case, it turns out that Junji Ito's short stories are one, long enough that you get a full feel for the world of the story, and two, fucking rule. This collection of stories is so fucking good. And it also really, really captures, just through this relatively short anthology, to be honest. It's only like 200 and something pages, which seems like a lot, but is actually nothing compared to the length of some of his other books. Really captures like all of the different styles he's quite capable of. So there's some like really fucked horror ones, but he also touches on like funny, horny, which is a big one.
I reckon every single one of his stories is like at least a little bit funny.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This has like some stories that are just like full blown funny. And it also, yeah, has like some like quite somber and sad stories, which is something that Uzumaki and Gyo have moments of it, but I don't think they committed to the sadness as much as The Gentle Goodbye does. Which, yeah. So, like, these stories are all so good, and it also introduced me to maybe my favorite Junji Ito character, Tomio, who is just a horny king that keeps getting himself into trouble because of how much he wants to fuck. So, he's the main character of two stories. Both of these stories involve him cheating on his girlfriend for no real reason and dying in both of them.
he horny. Isn't that a reason?
Yeah. And I think the... I'll just double check the name of it again. Yeah. Because I went to call it Tomio, but that's the guy's name. Red Turtleneck is maybe the funniest setup to a short story I have ever read, which is... A couple go to a fortune teller, Tomio and his partner, and the fortune teller says it's not true love, and the girlfriend leaves, like, upset, and then Tomio and the fortune teller immediately have sex. the fortune teller's like, yes, I told her that because me and you should be in love, and he's like, hell yeah! They bone right then and there, and then... he thinks she's into, like, BDSM, but instead she's a witch, and she cuts off his head. Whilst cutting off his head, she uses a strand of her hair to cut off his head, like a piano wire.
That's when she puts a cockroach in his yeah. neck hole, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But pretty much what happens is it's called Red Turtleneck because she gives him a turtleneck to wear to keep his head on. And he's running around the city yelling, holding onto, like, pressing his hands onto the side of his head, because if he moves his hands, his head will fall off and he will die. Levin's just said, towards the end of the story, so he gets back to his girlfriend's house and explains the situation, and the turtleneck was originally white and it's red with blood.
So, I cooked it.
Yeah.
yeah. Slept with a witch.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And she's like, fuck you, kind of thing, but then it realizes he's not joking. And the witch comes in and tries to, pretty much get Tomio to let go of his head so he dies as punishment, because she likes to keep the heads of the men she has tricked into sleeping with her. And one of the things she does is put a cockroach inside his neck slit. It's bad. But anyway, Tomio ends up getting his head reattached, but the trauma of that means that he constantly... holds onto his head anyway. The end. And there's...
Okay, so he survives that one. That's nice. Yeah,
he gets, like, some demon kids at one point as well, right?
Yeah, he gets some demon kids at one point too.
Okay.
Perfect.
And the demon kids are also tear his head off.
Is he also the guy in Futon who refuses to leave his futon?
Yeah.
And it turns out that there was, like, a mold that, like, took it, like, in the futon, and it takes over his body.
Yeah, so the reason that he refuses to leave the futon is because whilst his girlfriend was at work, someone came to the door and knocked on the door, and he fucked them.
He's so horny!
And it turned out that, Zamet, you're not going to believe this. Turns out the person he had sex with was a witch.
Every time,
Tomio.
Maybe he's
horny for witches, you know? Or maybe witches are horny for him. It's hard to say.
She puts a curse on him. So basically, yeah, he's on a futon and he covers himself with a blanket because he sees everything as just like coveting creatures and horrible, like a hellscape, basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
how many witches would you have had to have sex with that then cursed you to think that maybe you had a problem, or that witches were really attracted to
two
you?
Two would definitely do it for me. If it
I reckon three.
If it happened twice, I'd be like, this can't be a coincidence.
No, I reckon. See, two, I'd be like, it's a coincidence. The third one, I'd be like, all right, this is something sus.
Yeah.
Kill me three times. Shame on me.
But this one, yeah, his girlfriend also kind of gets inflicted by the curse, and she sees what he sees, and she escapes the house. But he, because he is the cursed one, can't, and they come back, and because he's on a futon, but he has a blanket pulled over his head. and he like will not get out from under the blanket. And then one day they come and yeah, they pull the blanket back and he's just covered in mold. Rest in peace, Keanu.
Gross.
Yum, yum, yum.
Yeah. But another story.
I do like blue cheese. Good point.
Yeah. So you've got like, those are crazy horny, but also like have moments of very disturbing imagery. And like, those are like so fun to read. Again, Tomio, probably the best character in fiction. He won't stop accidentally having affairs with witches. But the
it's relatable.
Yeah, no, man, that poor man. He just wants to, have a subtle affair.
Yeah.
It's not his fault they keep being witches.
But one story I really liked, which is really somber and sad and not really... It doesn't really have any body horror or anything like that, is Gentle Goodbye, which is... a girl keeps having dreams that her dad's gonna die. Unfortunately, with this one, I can't remember the characters' names, and there's a lot of characters, so I'm not...
Rico.
Yep. Yeah. So Rico's having dreams that her father's gonna die, and like that kind of plagues her because she's really worried that something's gonna happen to him. She ends up falling in love with a man and getting married, and he is part of a family where the family have figured out like an ancient ritual or like religious prayer basically that brings people back from the dead as kind of like a spirit, I guess. And they slowly over, they give it a time frame, I think it's 30 years or 20 years or something like that, anyway, slowly fade, so they become less and less visible through time until one day they're just gone. There's no way to extend it. They don't know that they're like that. They and they are able to communicate, but as time goes on, they lose, yeah. They become more and more, yeah, invisible and lose kind of cognitive skills and stuff like that. Kind of like ghosts, just slowly fade away.
But their existence is just so the family can say a proper goodbye, yeah, to their loved ones.
A gentle goodbye.
Mm.
Get it now.
Yeah, and as the story goes on, you find out, like... So she finds out Rico?
Rico's the girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rico finds out that about all of this because she meets her husband's great-great-grandparents who seem impossibly old. And then eventually it's revealed that her husband's younger sister is also one, which is, like, quite sad because she's, like, young. And then, yeah, as the story unfolds, there's a... Look, I don't know. There is a twist, and if you're going to read this, it's already, got your attention, then just skip ahead.
Yeah.
But
no, don't spoil the twist. Yeah. It's
okay.
Like all Junji Ito stories, they're totally worth reading. I think it's funny to spoil the funny ones, but that one, you're right, it is one of his more moving stories.
Yeah.
And the big twist is a heck of a twist arena.
And yeah, it comes back to like her visions of her father dying and all of that stuff. And yeah, it's just like a really, really well written, well paced, just really interesting short story. And I still just can't believe how good this compilation of stories was, and it's made me so excited to read more of them. I started reading I forget the
Dush's name. Wall Dush's entire wall behind him is just unread Junji Ito books.
Yeah, pretty much.
You bought like 10, right?
Yeah, so I currently own Uzumaki, Gyo, No Longer Human, Fragments of Horror, Smashed, legitimately 10.
Remina, you got Remina, right?
Oh yeah, I read Remina as well.
Viz published all of these. They're awesome hardcover collections. I have all of them as well. If you want, I can roll my chair back as far as I can and just start reading them all out.
The one that I started reading is Venus in the Blind Spot. And
oh great, it's a recent compilation.
So I really like that as well, but I don't think the stories are quite hitting the same highs as they do in Fragments of Horror, and I'm still very blown away of how consistently good these stories are.
I got completely addicted to reading only Junji Ito books. Once I started, I couldn't stop until I'd read them all.
Yeah, there's one really, really, really fucked one in Fragments of Horror. Like, it's very, like... I don't know. It's very Japanese. It involves a trans reveal, and it kind of is a bit icky and doesn't really nail its landing. But apart from that, the book is just
they can't all be winners.
Yeah, it's all 10 out of 10. And I've been exposed to stuff like that before solely because Japanese media often deal with things like this quite clunkily. But yeah, still very strong recommend of this book. It rules so much.
Unreal. Well, that is Junji Ito's Fragments of Horror, which is out through Viz. Zamit, you talked about the Dune book. Who publishes that one?
Mm-hmm. Great question. I want to say, is it Boom?
Yeah, I think it's Boom. Boom, do it. Yeah. That's you're on ban. You get a month. You're not allowed to talk about Dune for a month.
Don't worry, there's an adaptation of the David Lynch film.
You get X-Men in just 3 weeks until you talk about X-Men again. Don't worry.
I got opinion.
But 5 weeks until you can talk about Dune again. And of course, Batman 89 at the top was published by DC. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Serious Issues. You can send us an email. Actually, I don't have an email address. So you can get through to us at facebook.com/seriousissuespodcast or join our group, facebook.com/groups/seriousissuespodcast. Come and say hello, recommend us comics to read, and of course you can find us in the Sanspants Radio Discord, which you can join. How do you just Google it? Is that the how you do it?
We'll give you a link. We'll chuck a link in somewhere. The show notes.
Yeah.
Sanspantsradio.com. is where most of this stuff is, including links to the podcast that you can hear the Joels on, including Plumbing the Death Star, Baseless Speculation, and Thumb Cramps, plus my other two podcasts, Hey Fam, and All the Small Games. So plenty of things for you to listen to until we come and talk at you about comics again in a week's time. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks, Joel and Joel.
No worries. Thank you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
These days, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make all kinds of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, right here in the USA. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs in towns and cities across the country. And jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
When everyone is on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing and context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's GRAMMARLY.com/podcast. Easier said, done.